From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. This past year has been deeply traumatizing for a majority of Americans and U.S. residents. Immigrant communities directly impacted by Donald Trump and the Republican Party's policies, and communities of color who are facing virulent and open racism from Trump supporters are the hardest hit. But the trauma runs wide. One might expect that this year's Women's March, coming up on January 20th, just about a year after the wildly successful march from a year ago, would be building up with major buzz. But there appears to be far less excitement this time around. Why? Especially when the stakes are higher, and when so much of what we feared about the Trump administration, and then some, has been realized. My guest is Gordon Whitman, Director of Policy for Faith in Action, a community organizer, legal services lawyer, and strategist. He's written a new book called Stand Up, How to Get Involved, Speak Out, and Win in a World on Fire. Welcome to the program, Gordon.
Thanks, Sonali. Thank you.
So let's begin first with the idea of activism as something that is, you know, as old as the country itself. This is a tactic of you know, creating change in the country that is very much built into the fabric of democracy. Unfortunately, most Americans may not see themselves as activists, but usually it's been activists and activism that has created any change, right?
That's right, Sonali. And, you know, I wrote Stand Up because so often people that I meet are angry, frustrated, want to see things change, but aren't sure if it's possible, and not sure if they have a role to play themselves. And, you know, one of the tactics that people in power and that elites have is to try to convince us that you can't fight City Hall, you can't make changes, and it's just not true. And, you know, part of what I've learned as a community organizer is that these systems are changeable and that there are sort of tried and true, based on history, tested ways of organizing that make us more effective. So I try to draw on that history going all the way back to the anti-slavery movement, civil rights movement, populism, to try to figure out how do we apply those lessons today when we're facing such extraordinary threats.
And of course, today we have the ability to communicate with one another like we have never had before. Unprecedented abilities of peer-to-peer communication, which can sometimes either foster activism or get in the way of it, right? Because ranting and raving on social media may help us feel not alone, but it doesn't necessarily foment change.
I love my ability to connect to people in such, you know, different places and across so much difference. But we make a big mistake when we think that that's enough. And, you know, face-to-face organizing, trust building is what it's just essential to building up the capacity to take on the forces we're up against. If people don't know each other, then they don't have the trust to be able to take the kind of risks that you have to take to create change in this environment. So, you know, whether we're fighting for racial justice or against immigration raids or protect families from deportation, we're not going to get there unless we're willing to sit in rooms together, attend meetings, tell our stories, and directly confront the powers that be. And the book really kind of walks through organizes five conversations, but sort of five steps that have throughout American history and today been useful to people who want to make change, that whether it's at the local level or in their states or at the national level.
And I want to get to those five steps, but before we go there, I'm wondering whether you think this year's Women's March is going to be able to come close to what happened last year. It felt last year like the Women's March really gave people something concrete to show up for after the trauma of, you know, seeing the election play out as it did. But one might have imagined that after this entire year of one horrific policy unveiling after another from the Trump administration, people might be even more excited about getting out into the street. But there just doesn't seem as much buzz as there was last year. Is there just a serious level of fatigue setting in, you think?
Well, Sonali, I think we've learned a lot. It's been a really inspiring year, from the Women's March and the creativity of that to just so much activism and protest and organizing. Had the chance to be very involved in the sanctuary movement over the past year, and it's just extraordinary the number of people who got involved in political life who'd never been involved before and the amount of time and energy people have put in. I think, people are aware that we're coming up to November 2018, and that is the, big compression point in front of us. And we saw some really hopeful signs of the anger at Trump and at these policies translating into political turnout and political energy. But that's really, I think, where we're at right now is beginning to lay the groundwork for a massive turnout and political engagement in November so that the protest has an impact on politics. And it's where Occupy fell short. And I think it's the big challenge. So I think people are doing the right things right now, but we've just got to keep building towards November and realize that that's probably our first chance to have a referendum that shows that the American people do not agree with the direction in which the country's being taken by the president.
So let's talk about some of the things you write about in your book. One of the things you stress is face-to-face meetings are very important. So sure, when we go to marches, we are face-to-face with people, but we march alongside them, carry signs, we might have a conversation or two, but then we go home. That's not exactly the kind of face-to-face that you're talking about, right?
That's right. We, in the organization I work for, which is called Faith in Action, formerly PICO National Network, we have a lot of good data on what leads people to come back and take on greater leadership within social community organizations. And protests can be very effective at accomplishing goals, but they don't really have much impact, at least in our data that shows that people are more likely to come back. What really makes a difference is if you come to a meeting and you share your story with another person, just that simple act of creating space at the beginning of a meeting or an event for someone to meet another person, build a relationship with them, tell their truth to that person, turns out have a big impact on the willingness of someone to come back. And then the second piece is that people who directly meet with decision makers, their elected officials, their police chief, prosecutor, mayor, city council people, again, especially in small groups where people can really have an experience of directly confronting somebody who's making decisions that shape their life, those experiences also make it much more likely that someone will get more invested in the organization. So when we talk about getting involved in direct face-to-face organizing, politics, building organization, really talking about things that give people a say in how the organization works. So signing a petition isn't enough. It might be helpful, but it's not going to get us to the kind of political impact we need to turn this protest into really, some really serious power.
And so, Gordon, how important is it for us to sort of find our tribe in our community of the people that you do your activism work with? Because you have your social circle. Some among your social circle may not be super political, may not be active. Maybe they are, maybe they share most of your values, but they disagree on certain issues. But there are other people in your neighborhood with whom you might share a lot more values politically, who might agree with your activism. And rather than, say, going to a march alone or showing up at a city council meeting alone, you get together with folks that are already in your community and you do these things together. How critical is that?
Yeah, so it's, social change is a team sport. And I think we both need to be on teams, and that's important. Identity really matters. We have to build multiracial teams mm-hmm. as much as possible. And we've got to talk to people who aren't already convinced. And I think that's sort of one of the key steps in this process, that we're just leaving too many people untalked to. We're not connecting to people who are open to being part of a change process. So really want to push ourselves to go out and talk to people who aren't already seeing themselves as progressive or part of a social struggle, and listen to their stories, not just preach to them, not just lecture, but hear people's stories, hear what they care about. We have a lot of research that shows that people don't need to be convinced or even agree with everything that an organization is involved in to become involved and then get their views shaped by the work they do. Adults learn through action, So less preaching, more listening to.
And that's critical because we've all, you know, those of us who have been active, have been to meetings where all it takes is one preachy person to derail the whole meeting. The person who just loves the sound of their own voice. And so holding each other accountable, of course, is important, but also maybe trying to create spaces that do suit ourselves and maybe, you know, leaving behind the person that is too much work to try to change their behavior, and instead finding places that do work, because people get alienated and burned out when you have to deal with a difficult personality.
Right, and we're all imperfect and under stress. We don't always act the way we should. But you know, part of what I tried to do in the book is lay out what we know about creating organizations that are effective. And you know, that begins with organizations that are humane, that really treat people who participate as members, as ends and not means, that don't manipulate people, that really take their development seriously, that create space for people to tell their story, connect with other people, build community. You know, people complain about meetings, but good meetings and good social organization can really enrich people's lives. So we really want to create organizations that take people seriously, don't skip steps. And if we do that, those organizations, in my experience, are also much more effective at attracting more people and at getting things done, from local changes in, you know, how our schools are funded, or reducing levels of gun violence in communities, to making changes at the state level, to ultimately adding it all up into large-scale national change.
How important is activist training? Because some of the skills that one brings to running a meeting properly are learned and ought to be learned.
Yeah, so I think we all know how to be together, how to work together to solve problems. It's sort of built into our human nature. So at some level, we don't need to learn anything to get involved with other people to change the world. On the other hand, being political, learning how to reshape how my state funds public education or reduce the number of people in jail in my city by moving people who should be in drug treatment or mental health facilities but are actually in jail into treatment. Those kinds of policies and the process of building good organizations, I do think they can be learned. And if you look at the organizing network I work for and the many other grassroots community organizing networks in this country and local organizations, they're investing a lot of time and energy in training people and giving them the support and coaching to be able to make change. So yeah, I think you can learn to be a better leader and actor in the world. And some of it is having somebody who can challenge you to step forward, to take greater risks. Because anytime you get involved, you're gonna be told to shut up and that your opinion doesn't matter and that you should go back to your private life. So the process of becoming an agent, somebody who's really making change in the world isn't simple, and it takes other people to support you and continue to push you. And that's a lot of what community organizers do. And it's a lot of what we train grassroots leaders to do, is support other people in becoming more active.
How can you give us some examples of ways in which you found that with the right kind of leadership, groups of people have come together over a specific issue and very successfully changed the minds of people in their community, and you know, made progress, and then gone on to build on that, gone on to then join social movement and broaden their activism?
Yeah, so one story I tell in the book is the story of the Safe Return Project in Richmond, California. And this is men and women who returned from the California prison system to their local communities and experienced huge obstacles in finding work, finding housing, really putting their lives back together, and began to organize themselves to make changes that made it easier for people to find work, housing, participate in the political process. As part of that, got very involved in efforts to reduce homicides in Richmond, and then to reduce the number of people in jail in Richmond, and led a successful fight to stop the construction of an expanded jail in Contra Costa County. And that battle to take funds that were going to be used to create more jail beds and put them into job training wouldn't have happened but for the experience of people who had direct impact, direct experience of the criminal justice system in California, that laid the groundwork for California really to lead the country passing Prop 47 to reduce sentencing of nonviolent offenses and allow people to get drug treatment and education rather than end up in prison, and allow people with criminal records to clear those records to be able to find work. So I think there's a lot of examples, and it's really the history of this country, that people start locally, but they can't stop there. You take the things that you win at the local level, and then you build on them to change state policy and to ultimately change federal policy. And that's the history of the civil rights movement, populism, a lot of what was accomplished in the 1930s in terms of building a social safety net for working families.
And of course, activism is a long-term game, right? It isn't something that one can sort of say, all right, I'm going to do this one thing and then go back to my life. I mean, basically, once you get involved, we ought to prepare being involved, you know, for the long haul, right?
Yeah, I'd say it's like a roller coaster, because at least in the history of this country, we've had huge social change happened in very short periods of time. If you look at during the 1960s, when we passed Medicaid and Medicare and the Voting Rights Act and immigration reform, the 1930s, Social Security, minimum wage, major social change in very compressed periods of time. But it took years, in some cases decades, of organizing at the local and state level to get to a place where that big fundamental change in American society was possible. Now, you could look today and say, well, we don't really have enough time given what's happening with climate and rising inequality and racism. So, I think we should be impatient, but we should know that change doesn't happen kind of on clockwork. And sometimes you work and work and work and you think you're failing and then you succeed.
Finally, Gordon, what would you say to people who may not have known that there was another Women's March coming up next weekend, and especially to those people who went last year? I'm here in Los Angeles, where our program is based. We had the largest march, rivaling that one in D.C. There were marches happening in smaller cities around Southern California, all over California. I mean, it was just an absolutely overwhelming show of force that sent, a message to Washington, D.C. But of course, this year, it's a slightly different year. As you said, there are elections in November.
Yeah, so I think people should look for what's happening and participate. The other thing I'd encourage is that, more and more people are running for office. So are there opportunities at the very local level or higher up to run for office? And then who is running for office in your own community, in your congressional district, in your state? And what campaigns can you work on? Because we've got to translate this resistance into political impact come November. And that's really about large numbers of people getting involved. So let's take the energy from the marches and translate it into politics.
Thank you so much, Gordon, for joining us. Is there a website for your book that you can give out?
www.standupbook.org.
And we'll post a link to that.
Comes out on Tuesday, January 16th.
We'll post a link to standupbook.org from our website later today. Thanks so much, Gordon. Good luck to you.
Thanks, Sonali.
Gordon Whitman is Director of Policy for Faith in Action, a community organizer, legal services lawyer, and strategist. And we've been talking about his new book, Stand Up, How to Get Involved, Speak Out, and Win in a World on Fire. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.